Well, we had been just making a tour around town, and oddly, coincidentally enough, we had driven, my wife hadn't been there in a while, we'd driven down Hollywood Boulevard and Grauman's Chinese Theater, right. People are familiar with that, and there was a premiere. They have premieres there every week. And this one was for a uniquely bad movie, it was recently out, called Movie 43, which on Rotten Tomatoes, the movie website, I think it got an 8%.
Who starred in that?
Everybody starred in it. Oh. I mean, they had like all these name actors who did like 5-minute bits, and the movie was just ridiculed. Anyway, there's a crowd, there's a mob lined up out front. We drive by, we go back to our hotel, watch the evening news. There's Paul. Hey, there's Paul, looking a little bit older these days, you know? And so here we are, here's in a metropolitan area of 13 million people, some of the biggest research labs, corporate government in the planet. I'm sure there's something interesting that's gone on in those labs. There's a mayor's race that's happening in L.A. The lead story is 3 minutes of celebrity interviews from Movie 43. That's doing news right, folks.
That's doing news right. Which, by the way, no offense, Paul Majors, because I do want him to come to the show sometime.
Yeah, so, fine journalist.
Yeah, fine journalist.
Oh, yeah, just to give you a quick idea for this movie 43, one of my favorite reviews of that, it's a cartoon where it pans in from the outside of a house, slowly going in through the window to a guy in the shower, curled up in the fetal position, just crying, just weeping.
That's the review.
This sounds like
I didn't see the movie.
An artistic film here. That
it was junk, but you know, the point is, every night they cover this red carpet stuff. Every night of the week, every afternoon of the week, there's a red carpet event in L.A. You could spend having a whole red carpet channel if
you
wanted.
I think you've written this about this many times before. You know, the news, the audience in Minneapolis-St. Paul is a different audience than in L.A. And the and the station managers that are these corporate ownerships that are owning these stations, with the exception of the Hubbard family, which is still locally owned.
One of the very rare in the country.
Very few. And they're looking at the ratings in L.A. like, why can't we emulate this here in Minneapolis? We'll be number one. Car chases, provocative stories on housekeeping. They've tried to emulate that here with, you know, sometimes the talent and sometimes with the story content. As a media critic, and you've been to a few different cities, you've been to the press junkets, what's different about the news audience in Minneapolis-St. Paul than in other cities?
Well, there's still, I think, a bit more cultural resistance to trendiness and hype in the Twin Cities. But, you know, they're appealing. I mean, it's the whole radio, as you guys know, it's a demographic chase. You just want your slice of the pie. You find the corner of the media world, the marketplace that you can appeal to, and that's usually pretty good. And you can do that. And if you're in Los Angeles and you need 800,000 viewers to make yourself the number one newscast every night, there's 800,000 people out there that are most interested in an interview with the D-list stars of Movie 43. And, you know, you will keep your profits up to a level that you can pay off the debt for the private equity company that took over your station.
Well, I guess that's when you look at Entertainment Tonight and the news sometimes in 2013, it can be blurred sometimes on what you're watching. I've always liked there's a station in town. I remember when Survivor was the big hot ticket for a while. And
I know where you're going here.
It was like every night there was a Survivor update on the evening news. Yeah. And it was a very odd co-branding. And I think that you're not co-branding with CBS News. You're co-branding with CBS Entertainment on local CBS
here in town. Because you're all owned by CBS.
Because you're owned by CBS. Yeah. And you have a hat with a CBS logo on it as you're talking about it.
And the reason you're owned by CBS is CBS wanted a reliable local platform to promote their primetime news store programs.
Right. Well, and Brian Lambert, my guest today, you also did movie reviews on Channel 5 for a while.
I did,
and
I'm proud to say it.
Proud to say it. Well, you know, I have one of your better reviews here. Well, let's take a little. This is an audio clip. It's from 1988.
We Recently, I learned that Ernest, who's played by Jim Varney, was created to hype a decrepit amusement park in southern Kentucky. And since that humble beginning, has gone on to infest local advertising markets in virtually every major city in North America. You may notice as you watch Ernest Saves Christmas that every possible label is turned toward the camera, which kind of keeps up Ernest's meathead reputation as a pitch man. But as someone who actually thought the Three Stooges were hurting themselves, I must confess I actually laughed out loud watching this thing.
Oh, man.
I don't think it matters all that much that these laughs came in the first few minutes before I was worn down into a migraine slumber by the rampant stupidity on display. On the other hand, Ernest Saves Christmas has been polished somewhat by the Disney studios. And in the spirit of Santa and Disney, there are no bad words spoken nor any guns fondled. A very low IQ wholesomeness covers everything. It also goes without saying that Three Stooges and Jerry Lewis, my boyhood heroes, enjoyed long careers. And I'm here to tell you, like it or not, this guy Ernest is on to something big here.
And what happened to Jim Varney?
Jim Varney, where is he today?
I think that might be the last one he did.
That is amazing. Low IQ wholesomeness. I'm going to have to remember that.
Well, that's part of the main, the essence of the pitch.
That is the most inside of a review of an Ernest movie I've ever heard in my life.
Thanks for bringing that one up, Tom.
This is flashback. We have to flash back. We have to flash back to the Wayback Machine. Let's take a break. This is Brian Lambert. He is my guest today. This is Tom Osmond on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with my guest Brian Lambert of MinPost.com and TheSameRowdyCrowd.com. What is The Same Rowdy Crowd?
That's a blog that features a number of myself and people who have been in the communications industry. John Austin, who pops up on TV often enough, mm-hmm. does crisis management. Bruce Bennett used to work for the Star Tribune. Others.
Bill Sutter, I saw he wrote a blog. First time in a year, I saw he wrote an entry.
Dogged him. We forced him to come out and write something.
And this is a blog you can read, and you can comment on it, too. And the crowd gets a little rowdy.
It's the internet. It's here's a shocker. It's kind of an incivil place from time to time.
Well, and it's you don't have to go back too many years, and even in when I was in college and not long after that, the internet was not really a prevalent part of journalism. We're not talking 40 years ago.
We're talking
15 years ago. When you're working for the Reader, working for the Pioneer Press, did you ever foresee this? You're going to be in competition not only with the TV and the radio, but now with computers, and not only computers with digital handheld devices.
No, unimaginable.
And I'm guessing that the industry, the people that invested tons of money in these companies didn't foresee this happening either.
No, they were all well behind it. I mean, I was at the Pioneer Press when the internet sort of really picked up steam, and they were completely confused about what we were supposed to do here.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that Craigslist would come along and strip away vast amounts of revenue from their classified advertisings did not occur to them.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to that, did it occur to them that there was some way to firewall off some of this stuff and create some minimal revenue stream.
Were they slow? I mean, I think they're slow to react. The two big papers in town, the internet was maturing. I wouldn't say it's mature. It was maturing, and they thought it's going to be a fad, or it's going to be just the, it's going to be a different demographic we're not going to go after.
I think you're right about the second part. I think for too long they assumed it was just going to be the first adapter techies who mm-hmm. would be following this, and their basic readership would continue to grasp on, take the dead tree edition. And the speed with which that changed mm-hmm. flattened them, where you have 50, 60, 70-year-olds, reading their paper, taking their product for free
right.
off the internet. That didn't occur to them either.
Well, the challenge I have, and I have a newsreader, but now I have to read yesterday's news on a dead tree. It isn't,
and that was a part of the discussion in the time I left the Pioneer Press in 2005, And we probably had 3 years worth of discussions about, how do you hang on to this once the panic had set in and you can see the trends where it was going. And I don't think there's anybody who believes that 20 years from now that there'll be a dead tree edition of these papers. It simply won't be necessary. I mean, all your smartphones and everything are so much better in terms of delivering that product. And, but you can't right now. There's no way to match the revenue you get from, the Target circulars and everything else that are stuffed into your newspaper editions.
Well, and speaking of that, and the big retailers, everything is now online now. I mean, you can get your circular online into a phone app, or you actually get the coupons right in your phone. And people don't want to carry papers around. I remember when I got the first iPod, when the first couple of iPods that came out, and I thought this is not going to be mainstream, or people are actually going to now sit and put all their music on a little device. This is going to be too complicated because, trying to explain.
You're looking at me, Tom, when you said that.
No, I'm not looking right straight out at the. No, I'm.
Tom has helped me kind of get my iPod.
Well,
again.
I'm trying. I do what I can do. The technology adaptation, I think, is always challenging. But I think that companies like Apple have made technology so easy, and Samsung, other companies now are doing the same thing too. When MP3 players first came out, I mean, they were complicated to use. You had no screen, you had no visualization, and even if you think about it,
they were not intuitive.
And even the old AOL Prodigy days, I mean, it was a big deal. You had to go on the internet, you had to sign in for it, wait for the dial tone to come on. But then when the cable companies got involved, and then these other computer companies got involved,
2G, 3G, 4G,
exactly. It's makes it so convenient. It's as convenient as picking up at City Pages in the bin when you're waiting for the bus stop now.
And yesterday, one of my things for the last my fascinations for the last few years, based on people who said that they like holding a newspaper in their hands when they have their coffee in the morning, and is the flexible computer paper, which I saw an item just a couple days ago with yet another. There was a company called Plastic Logic that had this flexible paper. You could roll it up in a scroll. It opens up, and it's essentially, it's the internet right there. The images change. You squeeze it. The images turn the page. All the big full-color advertising you want to sell and everything. And it still looks a little clunky. They got some kind of a USB cord sticking out of the bottom. They might how the battery. But it's coming. It's inevitable that they will deliver that.
What is the future for local media right now? It's maybe not a question to ask on a local radio show, but so TV news, local radio, AM, FM, we're in the era of, 20 years ago, there might have been, five local stations and maybe 50, maybe 50 cable channels. Now we have about 200 cable channels, and if you have, the right kind of satellite package, you might have 300 or 400 channels. We now have, we can get any station from the world right now. We have, Pandora. We have any podcast. How are they going to survive? I mean, the demise of radio has been predicted many times since 1948 when TVs first were marketed. How are these industries going to survive?
Well, I think they, the goal for radio, I think, is some kind of a local marketing. You can't get that out of the satellite. You can't, you can dial into Moscow radio if you want. But, if you want to find out what's going on in the St. Croix Valley, you're still going to need local radio stations. Question is, how many people really want to do that? And then, of course, there's the overhead of the building and everything, which is probably a major expense that they're going to have to figure out some way to avoid and do it much more portably and cheaper. But it's an ad revenue game again. And, that ad revenue, I don't know that increases exactly as time goes by, So it's scaling back some part of it that technology allows you to produce more effectively with far less weight. The thing, frankly, that, you guys out here have got kind of a niche with the, the Music of Your Lives thing. But I am constantly amazed that the iPod generation is still tuning in to commercial, broadcast radio. I don't understand that. I mean, one guy in a pro in the business was talking about, it was interesting that it was country he used as an example, was that country music audience is kind of the last adapters. Which explains part of its still continuing audience strength.
And that's still the biggest format in the country, correct? I think it's still country.
I believe half of all radio stations are country.
Yeah. And they were the last to adapt to, you know, become, you know, adept with iPods and stuff, programming the music they want. You know, something like NPR's The Current is kind of living off new music, stuff that mm-hmm. people probably may not yet have on their iPod and want to be introduced to.
Well, it's interesting because when you bought an album, you know, a cassette or a CD, it's oftentimes
like my Herb Alpert collection,
like your Herb Alpert collection.
All right.
Your I was thinking more of your Heart collection or your ELL collection, which you finally have spoken of in the blog. You still have to listen to something somewhere to buy it.
Yeah, you need to be introduced to it somewhere.
Where's that circle going to come? Because I do believe there's a lot of people that there are a lot of people I think in we'll call my generation that are not listening to commercial radio. They do in the car. They do in the car when they're going to work, going home from work, going somewhere, because to hook up the iPod or iPhone or whatever to the car audio, there's some steps there, and oftentimes people are running late. They don't do that.
They're listening to the commercial music stations.
They are in the car. I think that is this place they're listening to. I don't know if people are listening to it at home like they were. Wow. I think when you're home, I think you have the sound dock, and I think that you're.
Back when the dinosaurs roamed the earth when I was a kid, I mean, of course, we did listen at home mm-hmm. to you know, Alan Stone, and if we could pick him up, and people like you've had on the show. Clyde Clifford from Little Rock, Arkansas.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Bleecker Street Theater would come on. It was very trippy, very mm-hmm. heavy.
Yeah. My guest is Brian Lambert of MinnPost. And MinnPost, this is it's an interesting experiment that it's a business that Joel Kramer has created, and with a lot of former publisher of the Star Tribune, a lot of former editor.
Did it at both jobs at some point.
A lot of former columnists, and it's free. You can listen. You can read this content for free. You mm-hmm. can. This is the future of news, correct?
It's one of the futures of news. You know, there aren't many of these in the country. There's a thing called the Texas Tribune out of Austin that is doing essentially the same thing. There's another smaller one in San Diego. But it's nonprofit news. It's essentially like NPR. We encourage memberships. We don't – it isn't required, but we encourage it. And there's an awful lot of fundraising that goes on. Obviously, the costs are down in terms of what they pay people. But you know, I mean, it's a legitimate model. That's what mm-hmm. Joel's trying to differentiate from a lot of what goes on the internet, where it's just a lot of gas bagging and people throwing opinions and insults at each other. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is actual reporting that happens at MinnPost. And, it's a very people who are familiar with Gawker and some of the more popular websites, it's a different tone than that. It's, you know, aimed at a different audience. But I think, it's 5 years now in existence at MinnPost, and it still seems to be – it's got its own sustaining momentum. So.
And one thing I find interesting about MinnPost, the Rowdy Crowd, and new media now is the commentary you can do. I mean, people now have found a way to interact with
– I kind of like that. I think it's interesting.
It
mostly.
Is. Interesting. Well, mostly. And I think that I've talked to a lot of different news – journalists over the last couple of years and doing the show here, and letters. You used to get letters in the mail and complaining about.
I got a collection of some of the best.
We got to come back and read some of those sometime.
Yeah, some very bad spelling.
In capital letters and
it was caps locking before there was the internet.
And how many four letter words are in those letters?
Quite a few.
Not allowed to print. Yeah. You remember when you first got email? How many emails were you getting on your columns when the email first?
At the Pie Press.
Mm-hmm.
Well, almost none. Nobody knew how to use it. It didn't have the email address. It wasn't attached to every story.
And with the MinnPost, not only do you know people can comment on these stories and comment among each other. But also the columnist will reply back. So when you dispute some fact or you dispute some opinion that might have been made, mm-hmm. now the columnist can come back and say, well, wait a second, check this link out, and here's I've cited my source.
The MinnPost moderates, mm-hmm. so you cannot get offensive and be quite as colorful, mm-hmm. shall we say, mm-hmm. as elsewhere. The idea, but I like this because there are smart people out there. Most journalists think they are the smartest. And, you know, their real claim is that they simply got to the story first and know a little bit more about it than 80% of their readership. But there's a 20% out there that probably knows more than they do about the given topic. And it's interesting to invite them into a conversation.
I've found that any topic that you think you're an expert at, there's someone that knows it. Even better, even more than you.
Bet on it.
TCmedia.com is all local news, it's all about local media. But on the Facebook page on TC Media now, if I put a link up, I'm corrected typically, and I have about five comments on how wrong I was on what on the point that I was trying to get
and
out
thank
there.
Thank you for that, sir.
Because there's, I mean, what do
you
just like?
Just didn't articulate. That's
no
all.
No matter what do you like, there's someone who knows about it way more now. Yeah. Maybe even scarier than you know than you think. You might think your you know expertise is scary.
Yeah.
There's people out there that might even frighten you more.
Yeah, who are, of course, they're moving into a level of obsession that you probably don't want to get to.
I'm guessing there might be one or two people out there that are reading MinnPost or you pick your blog, and they're waiting for someone to reply back to them because they already have the next comment in their mind that they're going to spout out and they're going to hit submit.
You got somebody in mind you're thinking about?
Not at all. Brian Lambert's my guest. Read MinnPost, minnpost.com. He writes the Daily Glean. This has been Flashback Twin Cities. I am Tom Osmond. We will be back next week with another show. Listen at noon today. I'll be on with Stan Turner on The Stan Turner Show talking about Dayton's.